Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome, fellow Prodigy, to episode 142. So happy to have you here. I'm super pumped to talk with our guests. We're doing something a little bit different on today's episode. We are bringing on Pierre Reichelson, who has not top eighted a big event or anything like that, but is making a name for himself in the Magic community by organizing tournaments, in addition to being the founder of a Magic-related company. So this will be similar to the episode that we had with Eric Freytag, who's the founder of Puka Trade a while back. Pierre is actually the founder of Borderfies, which is a really cool new perfect fit sleeve company. And so I thought it'd be awesome to bring him on and talk a little bit about what it's like trying to launch and run a Magic-related company. But in addition to that, we also talk about Legacy, because that's his big format. So we do get some Legacy tips on how to do well in that format. We talk about what it's like organizing a tournament, what goes into that, and how you can go about that if you want to do the same. And then we also talk about, as I mentioned, his company and what it's about, why he started it, and what's it like trying to run a Magic-related company. So a little different take today, but I'm really excited. Pierre does have a lot of really great information to share, so I'm super excited to dive in with that. So I'm super excited to dive into that with him. But before we do, I want to say that this episode is brought to you by the patrons. Thank you so much for supporting the show directly, you patrons out there. It really means a lot to me. It helps the show go on. And as a thank you, each and every month, I do a patron-exclusive giveaway where I give away some Magic-related product, usually a fat pack. But depending on what else is coming out that month, I might throw in that as well. So last weekend was Grand Prix Kuala Lumpur and Grand Prix Providence. In Kuala Lumpur, Mardu Vehicles took down the day, which is pretty neat. But in Grand Prix Providence, Green Black Delirium was the deck that took down the day. And what's interesting is the only Kaladesh cards in that deck were Noxious Gearhulk and Blooming Marsh. One copy of Noxious Gearhulk and four copies of Blooming Marsh. So I think it's really interesting that the last couple of weeks we have seen decks that are dominated by Kaladesh cards, just all kinds of vehicles and all these new stuff coming in, and they've been doing quite well. And now we have a standard Grand Prix that the list was pretty much the same as the old Green Black Delirium. The only difference was they have one creature and then four lands to kind of help with the mana. So I thought that was really interesting how things are shifting back that way. And again, this was only the top deck. There were plenty of Kaladesh centered decks in the rest of the top eight, but all in all, I just thought it was a very interesting observation. There was not a single past guest in the top eight of Kuala Lumpur or Grand Prix Providence, which means that I have a whole new list of people to invite onto the show, so I'm super excited to do that and bring them on, and I can't wait to reach out to them and share their stories with you. Well, that takes care of the top of the show announcements, so let's bring on Pierre, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I am super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a longtime Legacy player and the principal organizer of the Borderfies Eternal series. He is also the founder of Borderfies.com, a premium perfect fit sleeve with solid borders for customizing and unifying Magic cards. Coming to us from Kiel, Germany, Prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Pierre Reichelson. Pierre, how are you doing today?
Oh, that was an awesome introduction. Thanks a lot. I'm happy to be here.
Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yeah, obviously, sure.
Sweet. So, everybody out there, all you Prodigies, if you want to connect with Pierre, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at Pierre, that's P-E-E-R, so at Pierre underscore Rich. So at Pierre underscore Rich. Hit him up there, ask him about Legacy, ask him what it's like to, you know, organize a series, and ask him what it's like to run a Magic company. We're going to be diving into all three of those things right now, and I'm really excited to share that. So, Pierre, first of all, we love to hear the story of our guests. We all have an origin story. We all started playing Magic at some point or another. So what's your story? Take us back to the very first time that you ever played or saw Magic cards.
Oh, that was nice. So I was collecting Pokemon cards in the very early stages in my childhood. And I didn't actually started Magic in my childhood. It was like, I think I was 16, so it's not too young. And if my friend told me there's like this strategy game where you can just collect cards and yeah, like we all love Magic, and he just took me to a local Friday night, and I had like mono black vampires. I think it was around about one block before Innistrad, and I was they all play Legacy there because it's a very close community, and you don't have any way to draft, or you don't have any way to play Standard. So I was instantly introduced to Legacy, and I was instantly hooked. I mean, it's like the best format in the Magic game. And I think my first competitive deck was obviously mono red red deck wins. Mm-hmm. And then I just I think I then played elves for a short period of time, and actually Gaea's Cradle was my first card that I bought for I think 40 bucks, mm-hmm. which is like 100 I don't know yeah. more than 100 euros now.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's like and yeah, we just shared a lot of decks, and we tried new stuff. And then I was working for 1.5 years at a local media agency because I have like a graphical design background, and I spared a lot of money to buy my first competitive legacy deck, which is Maverick, mm-hmm. Like green white black hate beers. And I'm still playing it as a pet deck. It's not really competitive, so yeah, I have like Miracles as my main deck. Yeah.
Excellent. I like that. It's such a fun story. So you were, you know, collecting Pokemon cards while you were younger. Do they have Pokemon cards in German?
I think there's still a big community, actually. I think there's like quite a big competitive community.
But are the cards printed in German?
Yes, they will be printed in German.
That's cool. Yeah. So you're doing that at younger, and then a friend says, hey, there's this cool strategy game, and you can collect cards, and yeah. you're like, okay, I'll go check it out. So then you go and you dive into Magic, which is really cool. And you said that you came in, it was one set before Innistrad, so was that New Phyrexia?
Yeah. I think, yeah, I don't remember because I didn't look into the current blocks. I was mm-hmm. just focusing on Legacy.
Yeah, so that's when I came in. Well, I came back. I played when I was younger, then I came back. And I came back, my first draft was the set before Innistrad, which was New Phyrexia. And that was my first time ever drafting. And then pretty much since Innistrad on, I've been, you know, involved in Magic and playing and stuff like that. So that's really neat that you came in right around there. What's your favorite set?
I think my favorite set, that's a good question. I really like Khans because of the fetch lands, obviously. But I think Innistrad is still my favorite because of Snapcaster. Snapcaster is actually one of my favorite blue cards. It's like 100% value. You can do all kinds of stupid stuff.
yeah.
And it's like a friend of mine who said this would be really big card in like most formats. He ripped I don't know way too many boosters, and he got like 7 or 8 Snapcaster, which were like 20 euros at that time. So he was like really excited, and yeah,
good for him. That's awesome. So is that your yeah. favorite card, or do you have another favorite card?
I think Knight of the Reliquary is one of my favorite cards.
Oh, excellent.
I think he just does everything you need. He's like a very big creature for 3 mana.
For those of us who don't know what that card is, tell us what it is, what does it do, and why you like it.
So when I was introduced in Legacy, I just I was focusing on like very neat interactions and have a lot of synergy. Knight of the Reliquary is a 3 mana green white colorless creature that is 2/2 toughness, 2 power, 2 toughness. And for each land in your graveyard, it grows by 1. So it gets like a 9/9 when you have 7 lands in your graveyard. And the awesome ability is that you can sacrifice a plane or a forest, and you can search your library for any card. So you can So you can fetch out, for example, Wastelands to screw your opponent, or you could fetch out Maze of If to do some combat tricks. But most of the time, like in the newer editions in Acroloam and Maverick, you fetch out Dark Depths. And then you have this neat combo with Thespian Stage, so you can make an instant 20/20 indestructible flying creature, which is really awesome. Yeah.
That sounds really good. I like that. I like that a lot. Knight of the Reliquary. That is a pretty good card. I like that. So when you came into Magic and you got hooked, and here you are, you know, you're still playing, you're obviously, you know, getting involved with organizing series and a company. So what makes Magic fun for you? Like, why have you stuck around? Why are you still playing and gotten so deep into the community?
I think what I really like is I would say I'm a really creative person. I always like to do innovative stuff and like challenge myself to be more creative or to do new stuff that no one has done before. So I really like deck building, although I'm more into competitive play where you have narrow options. Really like that you can customize your deck to your own needs, and when people don't know what cards you play, you're most of the time winning because they cannot tell which card you play. And what I like about Magic is that you can you're mostly free to do whatever you want, so you don't have any, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I don't like Standard too much, because it's like a very very small pool of cards. But yeah, it's like I always loved playing Lego, which is like the child brick game, you know, where you can build stuff. And for me, Magic is like a combination of poker, Lego, and Schach, which is chess. So you have all possibilities, which is really nice. I really like that, yeah.
I like the, I've always heard Magic is a combination of poker and chess, but I like throwing in Legos because it really, I mean, it's true. Like, you get to pick the pieces and build what you want.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and then you have the high strategy of chess and the variants and kind of the counting, I guess, of poker. So that's really neat. I like that. I like that mix. So as you started playing Magic, we all, you know, I mean, we're not all great players when we start. Some people are great players right when they start, but not everybody. So is there an early challenge that you struggled with? Is there something that you were terrible, an aspect of Magic you were terrible at when you started, but that you eventually overcame?
I think about calculating my outs. That is like one of the most important things when you play to win and not play to not lose. When you think about how can I survive the next turn, that's a different thought than how to play to win in the following three turns. Like when I was starting with control decks, like I play Miracles for, I think most of the time I'm in Legacy now. So I think almost 1.5 years, I gotta check it. So when you try to not die, it's a different approach than trying to find your outs to win, actually. So when there's a creature you definitely have to kill, for example, a True Name Nemesis, your first thought is to find a Council's Judgment, for example, or Terminus. But if you figure out you can raise the creature, then your next idea should be to find and entreat the Angels or to find a Monastery Mentor. And this way you calculate different chances, different outs. And I think that is one of the most important things when actually you want to win and not to lose. So, yeah.
I really like that. How do you get to that point? So I like, you know, shifting from how do I not lose next turn to how do I win in the next three turns, for example. Like, does it just come through practice, or did you do anything to really kind of change your mind so you got to that point to where you're thinking like that?
Well, it's actually two combinations. Like, obviously, it's a lot of practice. You need to be quite fast when you play Miracles because it's a very slow deck, and most of the time it's actually the opponent who takes a lot of time of your clock. So you need to be very fast at calculating what are my outs, what am I searching for, why do I cast this Ponder, why do I look in the Sensei's Divining Top. So it's a lot of practice, but also a lot of calculation before. Yeah, I think what I did once was having like an Excel spreadsheet where I just wrote down my outs depending on what my opponent has at various points, and I was looking for what is the current meta, like how many Nimble Mongoose are played, and then I just was looking through my deck and adding like one more card to find an answer. And then if you have like one card to find it, and you have two cards, that's like twice the amount, obviously. So the chances are quite different. And
that's really neat.
Yeah, that's what you have to keep in mind. Yeah,
I think it's great that you went through the exercise of considering what the threats in your opponent's deck is, and then what your outs, what your answers are at that time. That's really neat. So that's a good exercise. You know, it takes a lot of effort, but I'm sure it pays off because you understand better what's going on.
And I mean, if you play like a combo deck, you should focus on maybe playing against when you goldfish, for example. I mean, you cannot goldfish Miracles, but you can think about different scenarios and how to get out of it correctly. And for example, when you play against Ruck Delver, which is like a tempo deck, which terrified most of the people for a very long time. Your win percentages increase by so much percentage when you actually have a counterbalance. And then you can cast the Terminus because they are not allowed to play Stifle. They're not able to play Spell Pierce. So when, like in the beginning, many people focus on finding the Terminus fast enough. And then they run into Stifle and they screw up. What you have to focus is you have to calculate how many turns do I have? And then when should I find the counterbalance with Force of Will backup? And then you are able to play like any spell you want.
Love it. So I love how there's so much thought that goes into it and all the preparation that you need to do. Like, that's really cool. As we play Magic, we all experience highs and lows on our journey. And I would love to dive into two moments with you. One being your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that. So tell us your worst Magic moment.
Oh, that's very nice. So I was visiting the Eternal Clash in Flensburg, which is like the nearest big regular tournament in northern Germany. Most of the time, it's like 80 to 90 or 100 people. For Legacy, it's quite big. And there was one moment where I was playing against Ad Nauseam Tendrils, which is like a storm deck. And my opponent was leading, I think, 1-0, and then we made a sideboarded game, and he made like ten goblin tokens, like Storm 5, and attacked me like two times, I guess. And then he cast Triska de Phobie, which is like this 4-mana black enchantment. When you have exactly 13 lives, you lose the game. You know, this is like latest. I don't know. It's from.
Yeah, it sounds like Triska Decophobia.
Yeah. Right. That's I didn't know the English name, but he cast this enchantment looking at my face, and I was like, seriously? And I had no out because I boarded out all my enchantment removal because you don't need it against a storm. And then he just poked me with his goblins to 13 lives, and I lose. And
oh, my gosh.
It's like the worst experience I had. I didn't believe it. I had like Flusterstorm in my hands. I was unable to counter the enchantment because Flusterstorm only finds counters instant and sorceries. And he just sit there and was laughing. Like, everyone looked at the table because it was actually in time. And I was very frustrated. And that was my worst experience because I also dropped out of the tournament at that match. And later he said, which makes me more angry, he forgot to take this card out of his deck because he was just trolling his friends the day before, and he didn't find a replacement for his card. So it was just a fun card, and he tested it and actually won with it, which is quite a hard experience.
Yeah, man, that stinks. Wow. So, yeah. And this was in Legacy? This was a Legacy event?
Yeah, that was a Legacy.
Oh, my gosh. Triska Decophobia and Legacy. That's crazy. So what did you learn from that? What did you take away?
I think I was really confident to win this game because I had like Flusterstorm and lots of different interactions, but I wasn't able to find an interaction with the enchantment. To be always prepared for like stuff you don't expect, like maybe keep a sideboard card like that can treat a card that you haven't thought about yet, which is unnormal. But I think I could have played this match better when I if I wouldn't be like too confident. I was very confident to win it because I had like a lot of Flusterstorms and stuff in my hand, and Snapcaster and the Snapcaster for Flusterstorm. I think I just had very bad luck at that moment.
Yeah. But, interesting, man, that stinks. So I like how you said just that you weren't expecting it, and you just have to be mindful. You know, you have to be, not that you can prepare for every unexpected thing because you don't really expect people to run just random cards in their deck, but you know, just kind of to be mindful of what some of the possibilities are and to check your confidence. You know, just make sure that you're thinking, that you're staying on point, and that you're not letting your confidence get ahead of you. So that's my takeaway from that experience. It's very interesting. So on the flip side are our highs and our proud Magic moments. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
I think it was the Danish Legacy Masters, which is like the biggest tournament in Denmark. We sure have a lot of pro players from Denmark. And I was playing Miracles, and I made top 4, which is a 200-player tournament, I guess. And I had like one game where my opponent cast three Liliana of the Veil, and I was at that time I wasn't really well prepared for that sort of card, and we were deep in game three, and it was really in a hurry, so there was not a lot of time on the clock. And I needed to win this game, because otherwise I would drop out and wouldn't make top eight. And for the whole game three, he cast three Liliana of the Veil, and I was really playing fast, and I was finding the first Council Judgment, and was able to exile it. And then later I was able to find Snapcaster to flash it back. And the last one I was able to treat with a Vendilion Click, I guess. And then I was able to race him. So I was winning in the last extra turn. And that was like incredible, because we both played super fast, because both had to win. And it was super intense. And like we both played, like he was on Deathblade, which is four color control with lots of planeswalkers and very grindy match, and it was really intense. And although he lost, he was really happy to have this intense game. And like the whole crowd was watching this game, because it was super fast and super intense. And like when he cast his last Liliana of the Veil, like the crowd was, oh shit! And then like two turns later, I was able to deal with it and race him. And it was really intense, yeah.
That's awesome. That's so neat. I love how, yeah, so you're both locked in this match. You both need it real bad. And I can just feel you kind of had a breakthrough. You know, you played above your level, you know, that day, and you're able to break through. Because you said, you know, oh, I wasn't really prepared for that kind of a card, just based on your skill level at the time. But you're able to, you know, read the situation, navigate it. You got the cards that you needed. You played them in the right order. And so that, I just love when you're in the flow and when you have that feeling of you know what to do, and you're able to do it, and it's intense. And obviously you want to win and your opponent wants to win, but obviously it's neat that it was to the point where even though he lost, he was like, oh, that was a good game. You know, so that's what's great about Magic, is, you know, that even though we lose, we still have the ability to be like, wow, that was a good game. You know, good job and stuff like that. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's true.
So as you are playing Legacy, I want to dive into that because, you know, several Prodigies, they play Legacy as well. And I know that I have friends that love Legacy and they want me to get into it, but I want to dive into a little bit more of how do you get good at Legacy, you know? So when you are, first of all, let's back it up. How do you choose what Legacy deck to build? Because there are several options out there. So tell us, what was your process like in choosing which deck you want to play in Legacy?
So at first I was just focusing on money, because I was a poor student. So I was looking at the budget decks, like Dredge, Elves, Mono Red, Burn, Affinity, which was like sort of a deck a few years ago, but now is totally unplayable. So at first it was a matter of money. Later I was interested in having a lot of interaction, like cute interactions with your own deck, but also having interactions with your opponents. And for tournaments, I'm mostly watching for the most consistent deck, which makes the most results, or the best results in the most period of time. So it's definitely Miracles, with like Divining Top, Four Ponder, and lots of cantripping to find your correct answers. Because like consistency wins you the most games. For you can, if you have a consistent deck and you play it well enough, you don't have too much bad luck, and you can really advance when you play it really good.
Excellent. I like that. So consistency wins you the most matches. So in Legacy, you want to look for a consistent deck.
Yeah. And there are two ways to find consistency. Like one way is tutoring, like direct tutoring for cards. For example, Elves, which is mono green, which has no cantrip, which has like Elvish Visionary, which is more like a drawing machine with Wildwood Symbiote. But you have like Green Sun Zenith, which makes the deck very consistent, and also Natural Order. On the other hand, we have Death and Taxes, which is a really consistent hate beer deck, because most of the pieces are pretty similar. You have like Wasteland, you have Talia, you have Rishidan Port to slow down your opponent, but you also have all signs of interaction with your opponent. And that makes the deck consistent without having tutor cards or cantrips.
Interesting. So either have a bunch of similar cards or tutor, and that's the way that you can have a consistent legacy deck. So earlier on, you mentioned Maverick. Aren't there several different types of Maverick?
There are like thousands of types.
Okay. So what does Maverick mean?
Maverick is, I think the name was introduced in 2012, I guess. I think it's, there are some people say it's based on the movie. I don't, but I have no 100%. I'm not 100% sure where the name comes from, but I think it means like having one big creature, or having one Maverick player, who's like, I think they mean Knight of the Red Aquarian, because it's like a very big creature, so it's like the Maverick of your team. So I was playing green white in the beginning. Later I played when Deathrite Shaman was printed, the Abrupt Decay Deathrite package. But now actually I was brewing a new deck. I don't know if it's still Maverick, but it's like the same colors. So when Collected Company was introduced, I was really, really looking for building it in Legacy. Like most of the time you have like these thumb rule for Legacy. A 4-mana spell needs to win you the game, like Natural Order, for example, or Sneak Attack, or Jace the Mind Sculptor. And Collected Company is not on this level, but it's a really nice comeback spell, because you can do end of turn Stoneforge and Knight of the Reliquary, or Mother of Runes plus another lock piece. But I wasn't sure how to incorporate it, because you need to cut Green Sun Zenith, which is like the most consistent green card. And when the Recruiter of the Guard was printed, which is like the 3-mana 1/1, which can search for a creature below 2 toughness, I was instantly hooked, and I thought, okay, I need to build a deck with around it, because you have like very neat interactions. You can make Collected Company, and then you hit Recruiter of the Guard, which finds you any creature in your deck. It also plays 4 Flicker Wisps. You can hit like Recruiter of the Guard and Flicker Wisp, and then you get 2 creatures, because you can stack the triggers to find the creature and then the Flicker Wisp on the Recruiter. What you can also do is I'm playing 1 Eternal Witness. So when you hit Collected Company and hit Eternal Witness, you can instantly get the Collected Company back from the Eternal Witness. And then you can also do crazy stuff. You can find Sanctum Prelate. For example, if you have an Aether Vial on 3, you can make Collected Company, find Recruiter, and then you can search out Sanctum Prelate and Violet into the game in response to maybe a Terminus trigger, and then you can say, I would like to name 6, and then he's unable to cast the Terminus, for example.
Well, there you go. That's neat. There's a lot of really cool interactions there. I love that. Absolutely love that. So as you are playing, you know, Magic, and you've been playing for many years in Legacy, which is a really interesting format, I'd love to learn, we love to hear what you think the biggest mistakes that players make are. So as you've been playing against hundreds of people, against lots of different lines of play and interactions, what is the biggest mistake that you see players make, and then how can we avoid that mistake?
Well, that's a very, very hard question. I think not knowing which role you are, if you're whether the beatdown deck or the control deck, and to sideboard correctly is one of the biggest challenges, I guess. Because when you think you're the beatdown deck, you will just focusing on getting more damage into the deck, although you should maybe find more interaction with the opponent. I think it's a really hard question.
So that's a good one. So like misreading or not knowing your role. So how do we avoid that? How do you know what your role is?
I think it's a lot of testing, just to make sure you test a lot of matchups. In Legacy, it's quite easy to get an idea what my win percentages are. For example, when you have a format like Standard, where you have lots of new decks, you don't have a good meta breakdown. For example, you don't you haven't tested every matchup, and in Legacy you have the opportunity to really test every matchup. So when I have a feeling I need to be better against Death and Taxes, I could include like the fourth Terminus, or if I have a bad matchup against combo, I could think about increasing Flusterstorm in the sideboard. So there's a lot of ways to fine-tune your deck to be the best in the current meta.
Excellent. And what has been the deepest thing you've learned about yourself from playing Magic?
That's another interesting question. I think to always be competitive. I really increased in competitiveness, like to be to push yourself to be more concentrated, to be more. You actually want to win, because I don't often play for just fun. I don't like the casual formats like Commander. I do understand why people enjoy it to just come together, but most of the time I play to actually win, because I think what I like about Magic is you can play all kinds of styles. You can play casually, you can play competitively, you can go to a pro tour, win a lot of money, or you can just stay at home. And I really like the mix of having fun and being competitive.
Sweet. Absolutely. So I love that. I love diving into, you know, what people learn about themselves and getting to know you better, and then what you see, you know, the mistakes you see others make and how we can avoid that. That's absolutely awesome.
What I like about Magic is like really the community. You have a lot of feedback about when you build a new deck, you have a lot of new feedback. For example, when I was introducing what we will be talking about later, when I introduced my Magic product, you have a lot of really nice feedback from actually your customers, which is like your friends. And yeah, that's what I really like about the community.
Yeah, I love that too. I love interacting with the community and getting feedback. And, you know, as a content creator, that means, you know, a lot to me to hear what people think and being able to shift and adjust. And we get that in the game too. You know, we can play a game and then we can get feedback afterwards. That's some of the best ways that we can improve, is after a game, you ask your opponent, all right, like, you know, what are good sideboard options against you? What did I do wrong? Exactly. So I would love to shift gears a little bit and talk about your role in organizing events. I think that's really neat. Like, that's something that, I mean, not a lot of people we talk to are event organizers. So let's see. So what's that like? So first of all, if you say, oh, I want to run an event, like, what do you need to do? Like, what's the very first thing you have to do to organize an event?
Well, so I was, there are the two guys from Flensburg. They host the Eternal Clash, what I said a few minutes ago. They said they want to make Legacy great again in Northern Germany. And they asked them whether they need some help to build like a website where you can register before and have like deck lists and meter. And at first they said it's unnecessary, because they have a Facebook page and you have like email addresses of people. But I was really into it to offer them this website. I made it for free, because I was just like you said, the community just needs to help each other. And so I was making this website just for free. I guess they paid me 2 times entrance, which is really nice. So that was my first experience with pseudo organizing. So I was not the organizer of the tournament, but I was into the web development of the tournament website. And that is really important, to have like a place where people can register beforehand.
Excellent. And you are setting up a series for next year. Is that right?
Yeah. So combining my interest in hosting a bigger tournament and my newest product, which is like the Bordify sleeve, I'm focusing on announcing soon a big tournament, which will keep place in Kiel next year in June. And it's quite a secret until now, so I will start a promotion in a few weeks.
Awesome.
I think it will be definitely really big, because I have like another secret I will announce, which will be quite the
surprise. Excellent. So when you organize an event, since you're kind of going through this right now, like, how do you find the venue? You know, what are some of the upfront costs? Like, what does it take, and how far out do you have to prepare? Obviously this one's coming up in June, and here we are, October, and you're kind of thinking about it already. So what are some of the steps?
So when I was organizing my first tournament, which had like only 50 people, it's for Legacy still a good amount of players in Germany, but it's compared to other events quite small. So the first tournament I was organizing was with 50 people, and I just calculated to find a place for 80 people. And actually, I was able to find like a sort of restaurant at the Förde, which is at the sea, and it had a really nice view to the sea. And a friend of mine knew the keeper of the restaurant, and we had a really nice deal, so we can sit there, play for like a few hours, and he was serving beer, and it was a really nice atmosphere. So I was able to find a quite cheap spot to organize an event. And if you think bigger, you should watch for like tournament gyms, sporting gyms, because they offer it for quite small money for people.
Interesting. And was it a sanctioned event?
That was one of the biggest problems. So I was talking to Wizards because I don't have a store.
Right.
And the next store in our city was not happy that I want to make a tournament, because they are quite, they focus on books and they run like Friday Night Magic, but they are not interested in running PPTQs or bigger tournaments. Mm-hmm. So they weren't on my side, and I had to do it without a sanctioned DCI, which is quite sad. But I think we want to play because we want to play, not to get Planeswalker points.
Okay. So it wasn't sanctioned. That's fine. So what was the prize support? Like, what did you do? Like, was there an entrance fee, or you just got people to show up and play Magic, or what was that like?
So it was €15 entrance fee, and as prizes, we had several Legacy staples like dual lands, fetch lands, card prizes, which is because of the gambling law in Germany.
Yeah, I was about to dive into that. So people paid €15 to enter the tournament, and you can't give back money as prizes. Is that right?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so to get around that, or not to get around that, so what you did is you use the entrance fees to buy like staples, like you said, the expensive cards.
Exactly.
And then the players would win those cards.
So I think it's a stupid law. We have it in most of the states in Germany. We have several different kinds of gambling laws. What I can say is in Kiel it's a little bit different. Most of the people don't know it, but that's one of the secrets I will be announcing. So we are trying to get the local office into checking whether Magic is a gambling game in Kiel. So for example, in South Germany, it is definitely a gambling game from the local law, but in Kiel, it's not quite sure. We might, be able to find a tournament, organizer that will be able to have an entrance fee, which is also higher, because gambling law only allows to have like €15 cap. So you're not allowed to have like €100 entrance. But we want to focus on finding a way to organize a tournament where you have more than €15 entrance.
Cool. Wow, that's awesome. So, man, Prodigies, you're hearing it here first, pretty much. So we have the baby beginnings of a new tournament series out there in Germany. That's awesome. Congratulations. And I just think that's very interesting. And I know that the whole storefront thing, I've heard that before. I think to have a sanctioned event, you have to have a store. And it's because they promote, because I think Wizards wants people to have tournaments where they buy cards, obviously, because then people will buy cards.
Yeah, but the thing is, you don't buy cards if you're a Legacy player.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. But I just think it's neat to hear the process. You know, you find a venue, whether that's a nice restaurant or just somewhere that has space. You put the word out, so you you build a website, maybe get the word on social media, share it with your friends, you know, get it out to the local area, so you spread the word. And then, you know, obviously you have to learn what the rules are in your area. In your case, you can't do cash prizes because it's gambling, so you do staples, which is fine, you know, if everybody understands that, you just say, hey, it's going to be X dollars or X euros to enter, the prizes are this, this, and this, you know, and then if everybody understands that and they want to jump on board and play, I think that's great, especially in areas where there might not be, you know, your format. For example, this is working, I think, because you're running legacy tournaments and there's not a lot of legacy going on. Out here, I mean, if you're in an area where your store, there's three stores and every week there's a legacy tournament, you might not be able to, you know, organize your own. But if you're in an area in the world, you know, you prodigies out there, if you're somewhere in the world that there aren't these tournaments, you can, and you just want to play with other people, then hey, take a page out of Pierre's book and see what you can do to maybe organize something. Again, it'll be, you know, non-sanctioned and it'll be basically a giant group of friends getting together. But hey, that's fine. You know, you can still build a series off of that. So that's awesome. So I think that's great. So congratulations. That's awesome. I love hearing your story. I love hearing your efforts in organizing a tournament. Like, that's so neat that you're going through that process and, you know, outside of the normal, I own a store and I'm organizing a tournament. So, and, we mentioned that the first tournament was called the, you know, Borderfies Eternal Series, right? And we mentioned that you are the founder of Borderfies.com. And so we would love to dive into that. Like, so what is Borderfies? Why did you start it? And tell us a little bit about that project.
Yeah, so Borderfies is like one of my first interactions with self-employment. I was for most of the time, I was focusing on doing project work for friends and like building websites, doing graphic stuff. And so one time I was sitting down with a few friends and I think we had some like beer and alcohol and it was quite late. And one guy said, oh, so I bought like a new Bayou and in foreign blackboarded, which is like 300 or 400 euros just to have like the black border of the dual land. So, you know, the revised lands have a white border and the older editions have like a black border. So, and I was just thinking, okay, this is like way too expensive. I really like the way it looks. And I just took like a normal plastic sleeve and I painted it with a pen. So I just marked the borders with a black pen. And just showed the card and say, hey, I'm way cheaper than you and it looks the same. Obviously, it looked really cheap, but yeah. So that was the initial idea that why shouldn't we have printed sleeves to just make up the black border. And then on the next day, I was visiting a friend because he once bought something from China, like production and from China. And I was just asking him what was the process, how do you contact a person that is working in a factory. And he explained it to me in very detail. And I was just getting some stuff together because I was working, getting some money together. And with two friends, actually, we put some money together and ordered a few sleeves from China. So I just, on the computer, I was doing the print file and they shipped it in, I think, 2 weeks. And it was like a perfect size sleeve with the normal Magic Cards border on it, like the black border. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, then I was able to get all my dual lands and, for example, 7th edition or 8th edition, which has a white border, to have a black border. And that was the whole idea of the product. And it turned out to be a quite interesting business case.
That's really neat. And so the last time I was at your site, you had the sleeves that had the different color borders. Do you still have those?
So, We still plan to have all kinds of different colors. We plan to have the 5 magic colors,
right,
and have silver, gold, and pink. We actually the lighter colors, it's quite difficult because, for example, you need to have a really great, really big. You have to the printing process is quite difficult. For like black and blue, it's easier because it's not too transparent. It's really
got it.
Has a good opacity, and the lighter sleeves are not what is the English word? Sorry. So you can see the old borders through.
Right. The lighter colors are more transparent.
Yeah. And we try to find a solution, and we are testing. So there will definitely be other colors in the process. But just keep in mind when we think about introducing a new color, You cannot buy like 10 packs of sleeves. You just need to order a lot of them, and we need to find out which is the most in demand. And so we just focused on black because, like, I made a survey asking what is your most important color, for example, in having a bordered sleeve. And a lot of people wanted to have black, and then will be white, and then there will be a different combination of green, red, and blue to have the color cycle. But there will definitely, I can't tell when it will be ready, because we try to have the best quality. Like, when I released our first sleeves, it was more prototype-ish product, because we're still really early in development, and we just want to try out, get feedback. And what is like the biggest announcement, we cooperated with Ultimate Guard, which is the finest, you know, the finest quality in magic accessories. It's a German company, and they really have an eye for the detail. And yeah, I think they are the right partner to have a really nice product.
That's awesome. So can people buy Borderfies right now?
They will be available, I think, in November in Europe.
Excellent.
And in December in internationally. So we had, as some people know, international shipping. We didn't offer it international shipping because there's a lot of legal stuff you need to do when you have a German company and you want to sell it to America. For example, when I would just ship it to America and a child would suffocate at the sleeve, I don't know what, some possibilities. And then I would be privately I would need to pay all the stuff. And that is like a legal issue.
All the legal issues.
Yeah. So with Ultimate Guard as a partner, we fixed it and we have international distribution.
That's great. So can people right now pre-order or get on a waiting list? Or if we go, like, where can we go to do that?
So Ultimate Guard, they have their distribution channels. If you're able to buy Ultimate Guard at your local store, you will be able to buy Borderfies.
Got it. So when it comes out, is this going to go straight to anywhere that carries Ultimate Guard?
Yeah. Yeah. So we will offer a European shipping via our online shop. So if you live in Europe, you will be able to buy it at our online shop. But if you live outside of Europe, you will be able to purchase it at any partner who is also listing Ultimate Guard.
That's awesome. Will your product be on Amazon as well?
I think so, definitely.
Because, I mean, they carry Ultimate Guard, so.
Yeah, I mean, whatever store is putting the products up, When they have Borderfies, when they have Ultimate Guard products and decide to have Borderfies as a product line, you will be able to get it. As far as I know, there is a good feedback from the distributors that they want to list Borderfies in their stores.
That's great. I mean, that's a lot of fun. Like, I remember when I first learned about it and checked it out, they just look really neat. And I think having the different colors is really fun. So starting out with black and white, that makes sense. I have a friend who, they took a full art land and then they erased the border so that it looked like they had a white bordered full art land, which was really funny. I'm like, oh, that's interesting, because I know somebody who makes a sleeve who will do just that. So anyway, so I think that's really fun that you have, you know, black and white, you have some of those other colors coming out, and congratulations. That's neat that you're able to, you know, partner with a company that has good distribution and get your product out there. So I'm really excited for you. And I encourage Prodigies out there, if you want to go check it out, borderfies.com is where you can go to see the project that Pierre has going on and take a look at, you know, what he's been working on and see if it's something that you like. I think they're pretty cool looking and, you know, would love to try them out. So that's really neat. So one question I have, Pierre, is first of all, are the sleeves legal in tournaments?
So, they are. So you're allowed to play it because they don't, they are not marked cards, because you cannot feel it or see it on the backside. So it's just at the front. What you need to make sure is that you cannot see the border when you look straight on top of the sleeve. So you have it, you know, that
right.
So you're not able to look at the top. But there's no problem with tournament legality. So, So you just, if you have any questions, just go to the head judge and ask him whether you're allowed. And if he's not allowing it, you can just unsleeve your few cards and it will work.
Okay, interesting. And now his little bonus, I guess, entrepreneurial section. So everybody interested in business and whatnot, I just have a few questions because I'm fascinated with this. Absolutely love it. So I've heard, you know, some of the best things that you can do when you're coming out with a product, of course, is to try and like pre-sell it, you know, because you want to get that feedback. We talked about feedback, how important that is, whether in magic or in business. So have you been able to pre-sell it or get any positive, you know, feedback from people who are going to open up their wallets and say, yes, like I want these sleeves?
Yeah, definitely. So that was one of the most intense nights I had when I announced the Bordifies on Reddit. So most of the people that I'm in contact right now know me from Reddit because I just created like this landing page where I introduce my product. And at that time, I didn't receive that yet from the Chinese factories. So it wasn't in production, but I didn't receive the full high quality sleeve at that time. So I was just creating this fake landing page where I just announced my product with all sorts of colors. And I was having a pre-order form where you can just put in your name and your email address and select what kinds of packs you would like to have. So I just had a survey which packs go really good and which packs, which colors are not that interested in. And so there was like this fake landing page where people just registered every 2 minutes. So I was just sitting at my home computer and I had like a ringtone whenever an email came in and it was like ring, ring. And it was like really insane. I was just I wasn't able to get any sleep at that night because I was connecting with the people on Reddit. So I was just answering every question that came up at Reddit. And I think we were 2 days on the first position at the subreddit of Magic. I think we have a total points of 400 or 350, I guess. Which is quite nice score for this Reddit entry.
Yeah.
And it was just really awesome. So we had a lot of feedback before we started producing all the sleeves.
Excellent.
So that's
one
easy way. Yeah, one easy way to test out a market. You should never produce a product that no one will buy because you just sit on it and so you spend a lot of money and people won't use it. So always make sure to sort of find out whether people will like it or not.
That's awesome. Have you read The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss?
Yeah, actually,
okay.
I did.
Okay, because that's what he talked about pretty much in that book.
Yeah.
You know, like it was a different example, but you did the same thing. You set up a landing page to get interest, and so you drive traffic to that page, and then that way you get interest from people. So here you were able to, you know, have people do a survey to figure out what colors they want and whatnot. Some people, they set up the landing page and they actually like sell the product, or if they don't have the product, then they will do the whole landing page thing. And then when they go to purchase, they say, oh, like we're out of stock of this particular item. We'll let you know as soon as we have it back in stock. So that way, because people who go all the way through the purchase process obviously are, you know, ones that would have bought. So then you can actually see, oh, this many people would have bought if I had the product. And so I love that you went through the effort of testing the market before you know, fully invested in this. So congrats. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks. So I was doing this landing page stuff because I was thinking about how can I communicate the product. And I was just reading the book you mentioned like 3 weeks ago. And then I was just reading the chapters and I was, okay, I did it. Okay, I did it the same way.
Oh, that's awesome. You read the book after you did it.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I read it afterwards.
That's awesome.
it was good for you.
Well, awesome. Thanks so much for sharing that, Pierre.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pierre, so much. I'm really excited that you were able to come on and we were able to talk about your history and organizing tournaments and your fun project that you have coming up. So do you have any parting words of guidance, parting words of wisdom for us, either something that you already said or something new that you want to leave with us here at the end?
So Actually, I really like your feedback. Thanks a lot for your kind words. What I have for feedback is the entrepreneurial spirit, like to start your own company. It sounds hard in the beginning, but you grow into it. Like it was just one very intense year for me to work on a stupid idea, which started as a drawing on a plastic sleeve, into meeting the guys from Ultimate Guard at a trade fair last week. So I think what I can give as a leaving word is, just if you have an idea, just go ahead, try it out. Make sure that you fail a lot and fail hard and fail often, because you definitely learn from it. And there are so many ways to improve, markets, improve the life of, maybe Magic players if you want, or improve the life of others. Just to find problems and try to solve them.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Pierre, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at Pierre_Rich. So that's at @PEER_Rich. And then, of course, you can find his product and reach out to him through the contact on Bordifies.com. So check out both him on Twitter and his product on Bordifies.com. Pierre, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. Thank you so much for your time and for your experiences and for the efforts that you're putting in to introducing a new product to us, the Magic players. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Pierre, for coming on to the show. Prodigies out there, I hope you learned a lot. I hope you learned a little bit about Legacy and how to play that, about what it's like to organize a tournament, as well as what it's like to run a Magic-related company. If you want to check out Bordify, again, it's bordifies.com. And as we discussed, he will be able to do international shipping starting in December, sounds like. So, Pierre, we wish you the best of luck. And Prodigies, if you want to go check out what his product is like and give it a shot when it's available, check out bordifies.com. As always, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/PierreReichelson. That's PEERRICHELSEN, Pierre Reichelson. So check that out. We'll have a synopsis of everything that we talked about, as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. Thank you again for listening to the show. If this is your first time, welcome. And if you've been with the show for a while, thank you so much. Whether you're new or old school, if you like the show and you haven't yet, leaving a rating and review on iTunes means a lot. It helps the show rank better, helps other people find it so we can spread the word and grow this awesome community. Speaking of growing, the MTG Pro Tutor Facebook group just passed 800 prodigies over the weekend. I am so excited. We have amazing discussions going on over there. People post deck lists and we can talk about it, and it's a non-trolly place to get feedback. People ask questions about rules. They see something that happens on camera and they say, hey, what happened here? I don't understand. And we have a good discussion trying to understand the game better. People post invitations to playtests as well as meet up at events. People discuss their results, getting encouragement along the way, as well as valuable feedback afterwards. It is a great community. If you are not yet a part of the ProTutor Facebook group, I highly encourage you to go to mtgprotutor.com/Facebook group and request to join immediately. We'll be happy to have you there and help you along your journey. So this weekend we have Grand Prix Warsaw and Grand Prix Santiago. I love Grand Prix, of course. It'll be so fun to watch what the winners do, see which direction they take with their decks, and learn from them so we can improve our play style and move on up. Well, I'm super pumped to join you again soon. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next time, and until then, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.